And I don't believe Congress should be in the business of regulating conduct, because I don't think it's government's job to regulate content, rather, online. That being said, I am very concerned, and I know there are millions of Texans who are concerned, about the political bias of big tech, of Facebook and Google.
First of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a coat?
We will double the Civil Rights Division and direct law enforcement to counter this extremism. We will hold social media platforms accountable for the hate infiltrating their platforms, because they have a responsibility to help fight against this threat to our democracy. And if you profit off of hate, if you act as a megaphone for misinformation or cyber warfare, if you don't police your platforms, we are going to hold you accountable as a community.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things are happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So, perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. Won't someone please think of the children? Free speech, social media, politicians, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a little while. Facebook bans Alex Jones and Louis Farrakhan. I mean, they can, right? It's definitely not a First Amendment issue, because they're private companies, right? Right? What else is new? Am I right? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. Or on Facebook and Twitter, just look for The Dave Bowman Show. Not on Spotify, because they can't get their act together. It's a long, long story. Ego Bibera Capula said, Oli Bibera, if I drink coffee, that others might live. Well, we've had a lot of discussions in recent weeks about what it means to be free speech or not free speech, or who decides what is, what isn't. And it's definitely not the government, so Facebook can ban people, and that's fine. And even Donald Trump's lawyers have argued virtually the same thing. When he banned followers on his Twitter account, they argued in front of the courts that he's a private citizen. It's not the government banning them. It's Donald Trump banning them. And so he has it's not a First Amendment issue if he bans them from Twitter, from his following his Twitter account. And I got to be honest with you, this argument, while I have repeated it myself, they're private companies, they can do what they want. Just like I'm a private company, I can do what I want. There are times in the past when I've told people to kiss off and you know, commenters and the likes of that. And I've said, you know what? You just don't need to be here. Primarily, my reason for doing so isn't that they disagree with me. It's that they create chaos, and they cross that line into being rude to other people. That's usually what'll get you thrown off of my pages and things like that. Just because you disagree with me doesn't necessarily mean you're, you know, Satan spawn or anything like that. But this argument that private companies, private platforms, such as social media platforms or newspaper platforms and the likes of that, because they're not government, can ban whomever they want, can regulate themselves however they choose to, has always been, what's the word I'm looking for? While I've repeated it, I've said it, but in the back of my brain, there's always been this alarm going off, going, bzz, 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 you're missing something, bzz, 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 you're missing something, bzz, 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 you're missing something. And it started to crystallize a few years ago when whatever network it was, I'd say E-Network, but I don't really remember. Do you remember the Duck Dynasty show controversy where Phil Robertson got, I don't know what the word for it was, suspended or cut out or whatever of his show because he wanted to pray on the show, and the producers and the owners of the show asked him not to. They said, well, you can't do that because it offends people or because it violates something. And we were told then it's not a First Amendment issue. It's not a First Amendment issue because this is a private company and therefore they're not subjected to the First Amendment issues. And so whatever the issue was with Phil Robinson, and I should have gone back and read what I had to say about it back then, but I didn't. So, but there was a lot of that discussion. Well, they're a private network. They can do what they want. And so can listeners. So can watchers. They can boycott the network. And I noticed that, you know, we commented at the time that E! Network or whatever network it was, I'm going to say E!, but it might have been somebody else, made a lot of money on the Robertsons. They made a lot of money on that show. They made a buttload of money off the Robertsons. And then all of a sudden pulled the rug out and changed the rules. Oh, now you can't pray. Well, I thought that was kind of a stupid decision because that show appealed to a certain demographic that they weren't otherwise going to get. And by doing what they did, they were kind of cutting their own throats. They were trying to mollify a few people against the interest of the vast majority of the audience for that show. And I thought that was a really stupid business decision, but again, they're a company. They can do what they want, right? The problem was, and we realized this then, the problem was that the company that was making these things, the show, the Phil Robertson Duck Dynasty, whatever it was, show, received massive, massive tax incentives from the state of Louisiana. And I brought up the question then, if this company is benefiting by filming this show in Louisiana, if government is making special rules for them to be in, to make this show, does it not cross into the areas of government entanglement? Hence, it is a First Amendment issue. I mean, if they weren't getting the tax breaks for it, sure. But because they were getting something, some benefit from the government for doing this show about these people who are religious in Louisiana and then telling them that they can't be religious, could an argument be made for the idea that this, in fact, is a First Amendment issue? And like one of my favorite pictures, the chicken at sea, I love this picture. The first time I saw this picture, someone posted it about something, and I don't remember what it was. And that was my response. I have questions. Because when you see a chicken in a kitchen pot on the ocean, you should have questions. You should look at that and go, man, there's a lot here that I need information about before I can make a judgment call in this. And that becomes the issue with what I'm looking at today in this Facebook idea. Kamala Harris, as you heard at the top of the show, has made it clear she is a candidate for president of the United States. She is a current United States senator, a politician, an elected politician who wishes to become the president of the United States. And should she become the president of the United States, she has assured us that she says we, but it's the royal we, will, quote, police social media sites, and we will make you, she's speaking to the social media sites, abide by what we say is the proper behavior. We will force you to ban certain people, to not allow hate speech, which, you know, again, who knows what that is, and there's a lot of issues with that. I could spend a lot of time on Kamala Harris and the fact that she's an insane progressive. I could spend a lot of time on that, but at the end of the day, progressives are going to progress. I mean, that's what they do. She believes that social media is a social problem, and therefore social problems need a government solution. That is the very definition of progressive. Find a social issue that requires a government solution, enforce the government solution. That is what, if you boil progressivism down to its core, that's what it is. And I didn't make that definition up. That actually came from Ken Burns in his wonderful documentary, if you haven't seen it, Prohibition. What concerns me isn't Kamala Harris saying these things in front of a tepid, and I do mean tepid, audience at an NAACP speech. What concerns me is people like Ted Cruz, who says that he agrees with me. He says that he wants my support because he believes in the things I believe, also essentially saying the same thing, that he's concerned that these social media platforms aren't doing it the way he wants them to do it. And of course, then you got Devin Nunez Cow suing him as well. But the bottom line is he wants to force social media to say the things that he wants to say them, that he wants them to say or allowed to be said. And it all comes down to, are they private companies so they can ban or promote whomever they want to? Or is there something more here? When Kamala Harris is saying we're going to police you and make you not say things, and when Ted Cruz is saying we're going to let you, we're going to make you say things, you kind of got to go, wait a sec. Who's controlling free speech here? Who is it that's actually doing all of this? Who is it that's actually causing this to happen? Of course, the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, as you well know, says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or expression or of the press. And you could kind of make an argument that the internet, the web, the platforms on the web, be they social media or websites or whatever, kind of encompass all of that, don't they? They are journalism, they are press, they are speech, they are expression. They are all of it wrapped into one. The prescience of the founding fathers to look at that and go, well, you know, there may come a time when that's the case. We have to do these things. And so throughout our history, there's been this tension between government, Congress making no law to abridge freedom of those things, and the willingness of people to push the limits. Now, when I was a young child, and I mean very young, movies were pushing the limits. You had, I remember, I've never seen it, but there was a movie called Behind the Green Door, I think. Marilyn Chambers. Again, I've never seen it, but I've seen other movies. I don't get this idea that I'm some Puritan. I'm not, but I've never seen that one. But anyway, when that movie was released in the early 70s, as I recall, it was rated XXX, and there was a lot of controversy about the movie. Not what was the content of the movie, but the very fact that it was portraying human sexuality and nudity in a way that hitherto had not been seen. Playboy magazine, Penthouse magazine, and all these things created a lot of controversy and a lot of tension about whether or not the government should do anything about it. And of course, it all came down to, well, please somebody think of the children. The children were the deepest concerns here. And that led, with the development of the web in 1996, 1995, 1994, Congress passed what was known as the Telecommunications Decency Act. And the idea here was that Congress made a law regulating what could be seen on the internet. Specifically, they were targeting pornography. Specifically, they were upset about children possibly getting on the internet and looking at things that would upset puritanical ideas. Okay? Now, again, this is not an argument about pro or anti-pornography. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is Congress made a law saying you cannot put this on the internet, and if you do, we shall punish you. Naturally, the ACLU and others and free speech advocates sued, stating that the law was unconstitutional. And of course, in 1997, the Supreme Court ruled that the Telecommunications Decency Act was essentially struck down. It was eviscerated and taken apart because, as the court put it, unanimously, by the way, which means that even the conservative judges agreed, you are regulating the free speech, free expression, free association of adults on the basis of what might affect children. And again, this wasn't something on the television. It wasn't something on the radio where you just turn it on and all of a sudden you're flooded with something. This was something that you had to take, as the court put it, positive steps to get to. In other words, you had to click on a specific thing. You had to go to a certain place. you had to know where to go. And in most cases in those days, you had to enter a credit card. So it was unlikely that children were just going to be given willy-nilly access to internet pornography. They left in place, however, one section of the law known as Section 230, which has now been codified in U.S. Code 47, Section 47, Section 230, and is known as the most important law in tech. And we've talked about this before. Essentially, what this does is it provides immunity from liability for social media and web platforms for what their users might do. In other words, commenters that say on Facebook or post something on Facebook or Twitter or social media or a newspaper website or whatever that say something offensive, mean, rude, or violate, you know, community standards, however you want to put it, the owner of the website, the operator, is not liable for what a user says and or does. Now, this is intriguing because keep in mind, in recent days, the courts have kind of pushed into a new area with regards to who's liable for stuff. There was a lower court ruling, it'll probably go to the Supreme Court at some point, about allowing gun manufacturers to be sued by victims of gun crime, because if they hadn't made the gun, then the person who committed the crime wouldn't have committed the crime, I guess is the logic. I'm not completely clear on that, but you kind of see where that's, you know, it's not telecommunications, but how is the end user responsible? How is the manufacturer liable for what the end user does? And of course, what will end up happening is you get warning labels on guns that say, warning, this is dangerous. Don't use it in a, there'll be Prop 65 warnings all over the place. Likewise, we've seen where bars and restaurants can be held liable for their, for the end user, for the clients, customers getting drunk and getting a DUI and getting an accident. And that's one of those sticky wicket areas, because are they really responsible, or is it an individual responsibility? Which is it? And then we go back to Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, press, expression, association, that sort of thing, in all of those question marks. Well, what does it mean to abridge? It's a word we don't use anymore. It's not quite archaic, but it is. It's not a word you hear every day. You hear it when you read the First Amendment, and that's literally about it. It's a verb. To abridge means to shorten by omission while retaining the basic contents. In other words, you take something out of it. So if you abridge freedom of speech and you use that definition, what do you take out of it? You're taking some things out that might be otherwise considered free speech, or to reduce or lessen in duration, scope, authority, to diminish, to curtail freedom of speech. But number three, I think, is the one that's spot on: to deprive, to cut off. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And that's really where we're at, isn't it? And that's the problem when you get right down to it. And through the years, Congress and the courts have had this, as I said, tension between what is free speech, what is curtailing, what is abridging, what is not abridging, what is it, and the effects that it has had. And one of the court's developments of ideas is something that I think we need to think about when we're thinking about these politicians who are saying we're going to regulate social media platforms. And that is what is known as the chilling effect. Now, the chilling effect is it's a great phrase. I love it. The courts have used it really since the 1950s. And that is a government action or law which causes a deterring of free speech or association rights because of the resulting actions of the law or whatever, but they appear to target free speech and expression. So to chill free speech, then, to chill free expression or freedom of the press, the law doesn't have to necessarily say you can't say that, or you can't print that, or you can't express that. It simply has to deter you from saying that. Now, deterrence is one of those things that I'm big into. As you know, I spent 11 years of my life in the United States Submarine Force, where I did and taught deterrence from a nuclear standpoint, where we carried Trident missiles out and we deterred the Soviets from attacking us and others as well. Deterring means to discourage something. Now, it's kind of a fine line there. It's kind of a fine, you know, whatever. And you got to look at the whole picture here. But you got to keep in mind, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, right? Abridging, to shorten by omissions, to reduce or lessen, to deprive or cut off. The chilling effect is to deter free speech and association rights as a result of government laws or actions. So when the Telecommunications Act of 1996 was passed, it was clear that they were, you know, eliminating free speech. They were making people not do things that they were taking away. That's a pretty clear-cut thing. There have been other cases. Bagot versus Bullitt in 1964 is a pretty good example. It's a good starting point, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, wherein you have the court looking at some things. The state of Washington, which is in the news today. This is kind of funny and a little bit off topic, but the state of Washington has passed a law recently, and I'm sorry, I got to get into this, but it'll only take a second, so stay with me. The state of Washington has passed a law saying that we will observe year-round daylight savings time. Now, that was passed with the understanding that Congress would have to approve it and all that, but we don't want this time change no more. We don't like this time change. So they passed this law. They never bothered to read the Universal Time Act that Congress passed back in, I think it was 1970-something, which very clearly states that states cannot observe continuous daylight savings time. They can observe continuous standard time, but not daylight savings time. And so now they all have egg on their face this morning because they're realizing that on December 21st, if this law goes into effect and Congress allows it, we can observe standard time, which means sunrise on December 21st will be at 9 a.m., Anyway, Washington State passed a law back in 1960s to require Washington State employees to affirm that they were not members of alleged subversive organizations and required teachers to swear to promote undivided allegiance to the government of the United States. Yeah, that's a problem already. And so the court struck that down, saying that you can't. The threat of sanctions may deter almost as potentially as the actual application of the sanctions. They said it deterred free speech, and you can't do that. Well, deterring is part of abridging, right? Yeah, you've got Lamont versus Postmaster General. This is a little bit similar to the same thing. You had people that wanted to subscribe to communist newsletters, and in the 1960s, they didn't have email. So you had to sign up for them via, you send a postcard in or something like that. And the post office refused to deliver them, saying, no, you have to actually come down to the post office and sign up saying you want to receive this. And the court said, no. Those two cases, along with some others, really reinforce this idea that the government cannot do something that will chill free speech, that deters free speech or association or print. And they're good. The problem is they also have this one, Laird versus Tatum in 1972, which kind of ruled a sharply divided court, as they would say, 5-4, ruled that you can't challenge a government policy on the chilling effect it would have on a third party, when the plaintiffs themselves were obviously not chilled, since they had been willing to identify themselves by publicly filing a suit. You can see where that's going to create, as we talk about this issue about social media, do we, the users, really have the standing? Because we're not the ones taking on the liability, or are we? You kind of see what I'm saying? It's gray enough that people are concerned, and yet at the same time, it should be clear enough what's going on here. And so, like a chicken at sea, I have a lot of questions, because Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, the freedom of association. They shall make no law that does that, that deters via the chilling effect any of these things. These are what we need to keep in mind as we talk about these politicians who are out there saying that they are going to hold social media platforms accountable for hate speech, what they have decided is hate speech. Maybe you don't think it is. Maybe you have an opinion that disagrees with Kamala Harris or Ted Cruz, and you don't think that that's hate speech, but they do. And if they decide it's hate speech, if the government decides that it's hate speech, how do you get to fight that? How do you get to... And right now, today, you have that Section 230 in place that was allowed to remain in place that allows the platforms, the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, the Washington Times, the LA Times, your local newspaper's website, the Modesto Bee, whatever, the Kitsap Sun, to allow comments without concerning themselves about whether or not there's any liability about what you say. Now, they don't have to allow it. They don't have to let you say those things. They can be offended. They can be angered by it, and they can delete you, and they can ban you. But in no way are they liable for whatever happens for whatever you say. You see what I'm driving at here? Do you see why this is important? And both Kamala Harris and Ted Cruz have made it clear that they want that section, the only really remaining section of this, repealed. In other words, make the tech companies, the website owners, liable for whatever you say. And if you do that, sites like the Huffington Post, Facebook, Twitter, Google, well, you can't count Google Plus anymore, could be sued every time a user crosses the line. So if I say something that you don't like, instead of complaining about me, you file a lawsuit against whomever. Blogs, review sites, forums, sites that deal with controversial issues could be pressured into silencing unpopular opinions. I have a very unpopular opinion about the NBA, National Basketball Association. I think Michael Jordan ruined basketball. That's a very unpopular opinion. I've been accused of everything from not understanding the game that I used to play and coach to racism because I've said that. Nobody ever asks me why I say that. And if they did, I'd be happy to do it. But it's an unpopular opinion. Could I be sued? Could Facebook now be sued because I said on Facebook that Michael Jordan ruined basketball? Innovation is diminished. Social media platforms and products would face new legal obstacles to getting started. This is part of the complaint I have about Devin Nunes. I cannot believe for the life of me that Twitter is the only way he has of doing so. I can't. All these people complaining about Facebook and Twitter silencing them. Oh, they're suppressing our free speech. Well, go start your own platform. It's not the technology's there. You're going to have to invest some stuff, and other people have. There are other platforms. Minds.com comes to mind. There's one called Constitution something, Constitution.net, I think, or .com. Or anyway, it's a conservative Facebook, essentially. But there are places to do that. But if they start facing this day where all of a sudden, you know, what they allow is considered hate speech, they can be sued for it. And sites then begin to feel pressure to limit real-time posts in order to review them to avoid liability. They want to avoid liability. And so all of this has the effect of deterring free speech, does it not? Does all of this have the effect of chilling free speech? In other words, causing the people that are allowing you to say what you want to say to step back a bit and go, well, maybe we shouldn't allow that. Maybe we should not accept that. Maybe we should deter this. And if we are deterring this, what are we doing here? What exactly are we bringing ourselves to? Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, right? And we've talked about what it means. We've talked about what it says. We've talked about the effects of that. So what happens? This has become my question now. This has become the question that I have for Kamala Harris, for Ted Cruz, for Nancy Pelosi, for every politician out there that's talking about holding social media more accountable. How are you going to do that? Well, they're going to pass a law. Congress is going to make a law repealing Section 230 of the Telecommunications Decency Act of 1996, as codified in U.S. Code Section 47. So if Congress makes a law repealing Section 230, which has a chilling effect on speech, how is it not a First Amendment issue when Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Spotify, The Washington Post, The Kitsap Sun, The Modesto Bee, The LA Times start banning people? Congress made the law that caused them to do it. Think about it. I got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. And we'll see you all probably on Monday. I'm just got too much to do tomorrow. I'm sorry. But we'll see you on Monday. Have a great day, everybody.
Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.